We tell stories to share the human experience.
No matter what form it takes.
Actor, photographer, theatre maker, musician, whoever is trying to be heard.
We can't stop telling stories. There's no end to them.
By telling stories, we connect to each other and create a sense of community.
This is an opportunity to share stories from a talented and diverse range of individuals, in the hope it provides inspiration and knowledge.
This is a podcast about Australian storytelling in all its forms, hosted by two Australians in the arts industry.
Welcome to the Act of Storytelling.
Hi, everybody.
I'm Lauren Bailey.
And I'm Nick Kane.
And thanks for listening. Now, before we get started today, I would like to do something, Nick, that, to be honest, I'm surprised neither of us has thought of doing previously, particularly given that this is a podcast about Australian storytelling. So on that note, we would like to show our respect and acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, of elders past and present, on which this podcast recording today takes place.
Yeah, that's so fantastic, Lauren. And I think it's worth noting in particular the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, where you are, Lauren, and the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, where I am, Lauren. And of course, welcome to Podcast 21. Podcast 20 was a big one to celebrate, Lauren. We, of course, launched the wonderful Cultural Temperature blog out into the world.
Yeah, and I mean, it's so exciting because we have been recording the podcast and releasing it out into the world for nearly 2 years now. And we've been talking about the idea of the blog for a big part of that. So it was great to finally go live with. Our theme for the month was inspiration, which was awesome. And I've got to say, Nick, I loved your blog on... it's very feel good. On artistic crushes.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, I thought it was great. And it inspired me to listen to the off-camera podcast, which we've both talked about before, with Jake Gyllenhaal, who is, of course, your...
Just one of my heroes, one of my crushes.
I was going to say what it is. Your free pass, right? It's Jake Gyllenhaal.
Probably one of my free passes. Yeah, I'll take that. Yeah, it was. And I mean, of course, you put me onto the off-camera podcast as a starter. So I guess thank you for that, first of all. But what did you think of Jake's particular podcast?
I really, really enjoyed it. And so I bring it up because, of course, having listened to it, I was like, I totally get where you're coming from. He talks about all sorts of things about the process and his acting journey, but it's also just his perspective on life and how we're all connected. Yeah.
And his passion is just fantastic. Gets the hairs on the back of my neck up when I listen to him speak. It's fantastic.
Okay. You're all getting a little bit excited here.
Yeah. Cool me down here, Lauren. Cool me down.
But so maybe we'll pop up a link to that particular podcast on the website this month so that other people can check it out.
Fantastic idea. Now, Lauren, let's get stuck into how your month was. How was it?
Well, I had to listen to our podcast just before we recorded today, Podcast 20.
Yes.
Specifically to the end, just to sort of remind myself of where we were at the end of last month's podcast. And we were in a pretty interesting place.
Yeah, I did this exact same thing, and I think it's a lovely thing to do because you can kind of get a nice through line of where you've come from. And we were in a really strange place, weren't we? Yes. It was a little weird in the end.
A little bit random.
Yeah.
And of course, I talked about wanting to find my own pace in this busy time of year, a sense of alignment, but also ultimately not really knowing what the answer was.
No.
And that turned out to be a great place for me to be to go into whatever was coming next.
Right. Tell me why that was the case.
Well, I think just that admission of not knowing and being okay with not knowing really opened me up. And so since we last recorded, I've been focusing on this idea of, yes, it's a busy time of year. Great. But I want to be centered inside of that idea and not creating ideas for myself of, oh, it's so busy, I'm not going to have the energy to do everything. Or, oh, it's so busy, I'm not going to have time to get everything done. But instead flipping that and going, okay, yes, it's busy. But I'm not going to worry about if that's ideal or not, or how long I'll be busy for, or when I'll next have time off. But just going, well, that's just how it is.
I love that. It just relieves you of so much pressure that you put on yourself, right?
Yeah. And I don't know if it's directly linked, but I really felt a sense this month that things began to move forward for me again.
Ah, so you think that particular energy has helped you in the world as far as just a more relaxed energy, would you say, in some ways?
Yeah, I just relaxed, I think, is more a symptom of the energy, definitely feeling more grounded. It's been a great month. I've had quite a few auditions. I've been to some screenings of some films that I've shot this year, which has been really nice. It's always nice to see the outcome of your work.
Yeah, you've been getting a lot of callbacks too. I seem to feel like you're messaging me about a callback, which is lovely to see. That must mean that
it was so funny. I have to tell listeners this. So I had a callback recently, and of course, the previous callback, this is ridiculous to be talking about on air. I changed my outfit between callbacks, and it meant that when I went in the second time, I was actually wearing the exact same outfit as the person I was auditioning with.
Oh,
and
really?
So we were talking about choice of clothing for auditions.
Yeah.
And she said, "Oh, no, I always wear the same thing." And I dress differently because I always think, oh, good to show another perspective.
Yeah, another side.
Mm-hmm. So, of course, I texted you and also Andrew McKinnon in the morning before this particular callback and said, "You guys, quick question. What do you think? Same outfit or different outfit?" And you both came back suggesting to wear the same outfit. So I'm like, okay, I'm going in with the same thing. And I arrived at the casting and I got in there and the first thing the casting director said to me is, "Aren't you wearing the same thing you were wearing the other day?"
Oh, no.
No, it was actually really wonderful because we had a laugh and we had this whole conversation about it.
Great.
And it was really interesting because they were like, oh, I've never thought about it from that perspective, you know, and it's something that as an actor on the other side, you're thinking about every minute detail.
Yes.
So it's quite refreshing.
No, but isn't that amazing too, that it then became a talking point and a point of connection for
you?
Yeah,
it was actually really lovely, but it did just make me laugh.
Oh, fantastic. That is so funny.
So moving on past that and back to my month, because it has been quite exciting, Nick. And talking about things moving forward, of course, I've just received the assembly edit for In Life Today.
Oh my God. How exciting.
I know.
You've watched it, right? You've sat down and watched it? Or is it just sitting there right now?
That is hilarious that you can even ask that question because I really had to go out, but it's like, I cannot leave the house until I've watched this.
Great.
I have watched it a lot.
Oh, good.
This has sort of been my last learning for the month. But I just want to mention this because obviously I'm learning a lot from this filmmaking process. I think that's apparent to everyone. But I've just discovered something that is adding to this idea of feeling grounded this month.
Uh-huh.
As I've been working through writing notes for the next steps of editing, something has become really clear. It was really exciting to sit down and watch the film that we created on a screen in front of me. Even that just blows my mind.
Yeah.
But also to look at it and to know really definitely what I feel the next steps are to fine-tune it into the story that I want to tell.
Fantastic. You know, that focus is a really brilliant thing, isn't it? Because you come back to you, and this is, I think, a really exciting part in the journey where you've got this focus now. He's come back with something tangible and you can go, right, I know exactly the next thing I need to do. Where usually in the early days of the film, there's just so much stuff going on and so many different ways and paths that you could take that now you've got a real tangible thing. It's really nice to be able to go, right, I know it's either right or left with this decision. Yes or no with this decision. Isn't that interesting? The perspective of it. Yeah, great. Oh, that's super exciting.
Anyway, enough about me.
Lovely insight.
What about you, Kane Dog? You had a few setbacks last month. How's everything tracking for you?
Yeah, I did have a few setbacks. You're right. And you've already spoken about that strange energy that we had at the end of the podcast. But, you know, I spoke specifically about feeling a little lost and wayward. And you used a beautiful analogy called treading water, which was a really nice way to put it. And I think we ended in a way where we said, let's give some direction to my flapping in the water.
Right.
Which if you haven't listened to podcast 20, gives you a bit of an understanding about how crazy that was, right? But what I sort of found this month from being a little lost and wayward and going, well, how do I give direction to my flapping? Which I'll keep saying because it's so fantastic. I really this month, all it was about for me, what I took out of that last podcast and what you said to me was, and don't mind my language here, but just fucking persist, right? And the swearing has
to be there.
That's
what I said to you.
Because that's the way I am. No, this is what I took out of it.
Oh, okay.
Just fucking persist, you know? Everything might not necessarily be going 100% well, or you might not necessarily be doing these things where you can say to Lauren, hey, Lauren, this week I did this and next week I did this. But sometimes in life, you have to just persist with the small things. But there's a lovely quote from Andy Warhol that I quite enjoy, which is, you need to let the little things that would ordinarily bore you suddenly thrill you.
Ah.
So how did I do
is
that?
Is that why you seem so much more excited when you speak to me?
I'm always excited to speak to you, Lauren. You know this. But what I mean is the little things. So I meditated. I decided to write some things. I read a wonderful book. I was just doing my vocal warm-ups every day, making sure that I didn't miss those. I just really focused on these small little steps. Yeah, but you know what it does? It makes you, I guess, in a way, get back into the present rather than thinking too far ahead. Because I think what I was doing and why I was so lost and wayward was the fact that I had all these thoughts about what I wanted to be doing and where I should be right now and all that type of stuff. And it's actually really tiring. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Not physically tiring, but mentally.
Because you put so much energy into that,
yeah.
Placing expectations on yourself.
And you're not doing anything. You're just thinking, right? So I think, yeah, it was really around just actioning the things that I needed to, the small things day to day.
Yep.
And that's what I mean by just fucking persisting. Just doing the things that I need to do to get ready for 2016.
Yeah.
You know, I had a few other things going on as well. Like I went down to Melbourne and did a wonderful gig for Disney. I did a voiceover for Amarok. You know, there's a few bits that were going on, but I really focused my energy on the small things this month.
That is really inspiring.
But yeah, but much like you, Lauren, the bit that I take out of that is it really relaxed me too. Just doing the small things.
Well, I definitely think this relaxed, centered energy we've got going here is a great place to be to go into this month's interview.
Well, sit yourself down, make yourself a cup of coffee.
Relax.
And enjoy. Relax. Meditate.
Don't meditate.
Here is
podcast. Meditate later, but not now.
Not now. Here is podcast 21. Well, here we are in the wonderful Evie Group studio and store in the heart of very hip suburbia, Balmain. Lauren is joining us via Skype, and we are here with the wonderful graphic designer, art director, and product designer, Dominic Chong. Welcome, Dom.
Hi, Dominic.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
No problems at all. Can you tell us a little bit about why we're in the Evie Group studio today?
Nick approached me and said, you know, I'd like to hear the story of my career, my life a little bit. Uh-huh. And I said, wow, you know, I'm honored to, if you want to hear it, here we are.
Here we are.
There we are.
But it's a beautiful space. Like, I mean, for those that don't know Balmain, it's a very hip suburb. And this store itself has some wonderful products that have been designed by you and your partner Alex. Don.
That's right.
Hmm.
So to get us started, maybe we'll get you to read your story, Dom, and then we'll get into a bit more about Evie Group and the other exciting things you've been working on.
Well, I was born and educated in Singapore. When I was a kid, I didn't do too well in school because I was always daydreaming, imagining interesting objects and scenarios. And coming from Singapore, which is all about how well you did academically in math and science, I struggled. Now, looking back, I could now sort of tell that I was a creative type, but without some of the clarity that comes with age. You know, I went on to do a diploma in manufacturing engineering as I thought it was a practical career choice, and I hated it. You know, like Asian parents will be like, oh, you got to get yourself a viable education, a stable income and all that. So, you know, that's what I did. But after that, I had to do 2.5 years of national service in a combat unit. Now, it was tough times, but I've learned a lot of things I could use now, and not just like discipline, but meeting people and learning to deal with people from, I would say, all sections of society. Now, after the army stint, I worked for a time at an engineering firm and decided this is not what I wanted to do. It was time to make a serious choice on embarking on my creative path. So I came to Australia 14 years ago to take a bachelor in industrial design. They didn't offer this course back in Singapore. And it was a toss-up between the UK and Australia, and I picked Australia because the weather was better and it was
good choice.
Closer to home. And I met so many wonderful people, you know, nothing against Brits.
Disclaimer.
Disclaimer.
This is an Australian podcast, that's fine.
Now, this is where I met my wife, and I've decided to stay. We both then completed our masters, worked in various design industries before starting our own design company here in Sydney. And it's funny how your life could jump all over the place before you find what you're looking for. Mm. So here we are.
Well, that is really exciting, and I already have so many things popping up for me. Particularly, I just want to call it out now, when you talk about the clarity that comes with age. I'm going to come back to that later. Mm. But let's start with your childhood in Singapore, which is an interesting city in its own right that we could spend hours talking about. But can you paint a bit of a picture of your early childhood for us, and maybe some of the highlights that you remember growing up in such a unique place?
Singapore, I think Singapore has, well, people outside of Singapore has quite some concepts or maybe misconceptions about Singapore. When I grew up, it was a simple lifestyle. You know, I didn't grow up in a very sort of poor family where I had to struggle. Singapore is a very modern city where it is both very westernized, but also traditional, sort of in you know, Asian traditions and whatnot. So I was able to, you know, grow up with a couple of languages under my belt and allowed me to sort of maybe, I would say, integrate and collaborate maybe better with now that I'm in Australia.
So while we think Australia is quite a diverse country as well, that Singapore in itself has quite a mix. So you're right, it probably helped you to start to, I guess, integrate when you came to Australia as well.
Yep, I think Sydney especially is very similar to Singapore in a lot of ways.
Okay.
So
that's interesting. And you mentioned that when you were in Singapore back in school that you didn't do too well due to daydreaming in a system that prized itself on maths and science and those kinds of subjects. At that time, did you, in the environment you were growing up in, you know, were there other ways for you to allow your creative side to grow, or was that something that came later?
It was difficult. It is a creative, like you said, Singapore is a young nation. And thus, with young nations, they care more about the more industrial sectors first, like engineering, you know, banking and finance, bioscience, and all that stuff. And now we start to see a change where they push more for the creative arts, where a more mature, still young but more mature country like Australia have more of a head start with. So my childhood was difficult because I'm like, oh, you know, this product could be cool. Oh, I love that graphic. But it was never really a viable choice in the back of my mind that this is a career. Even when I was young, I knew, you know, you just don't grow up to be a graphic designer or a writer or an actor. It's not that easy or viable.
And I feel like you've already kind of answered this question a little bit, but it sounds like your parents were much more focused on maths and science. But did they have any creative sides to them as well?
Well, to be honest, my parents never gave me pressure on which path to take.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah.
They're not very, I would say, traditional. But it's more of the overall system that sort of dampers your enthusiasm a little bit. But I managed to sort of try to be creative in other ways.
So speaking of systems, of course,
post
your manufacturing engineering diploma came the army stint, which is 2.5 years national service, and it's mandatory for male citizens between 18 to 21 in Singapore. Can you take us through, I don't know, what an average day was like, how you felt about all of that?
Well, those were tough times. And it depends on where you go, because my brother was a 9-to-5 medic in an air-conditioned base. So he just sat in the room all day, you know, and just looked at his phone and, you know, surfed websites and stuff, occasionally do some work.
Yeah.
But because I was in a combat unit, most days I was out in the jungle, just marching and sleeping in mud and, you know, practicing firing weapons. And you can only leave camp on Saturday afternoon, I would say. And then you have to come back Sunday night. So essentially, you are out, you have freedom for 1.5 days, and that's it. And that's for 2.5 years.
Wow.
And so it's constant.
Yeah. And was that just luck of the draw that your brother got to, I guess, take that path in the medic space where you had combat training? Was that just luck of the draw?
Yeah, it's a bit of luck. It's a bit of see how fit you are, your education level. It's all different things. Actually, don't really know for sure, but sort of chuck you around.
But you ended up in the combat unit, and you said that you only had really a day and a half break. Was there any way that you could find other creative outlets?
You see, this is a very interesting question, because in the army, you do not think for yourself.
Yeah,
it is the fact they, from the beginning, they break you down to think as a collective. You don't question your superiors. So that also goes against creative types, because you know, you want to think outside the box. You want to try different things. And you know, I'm painting a very bleak picture for me, but that's not the case. But what I'm saying is that it works against, if you're a creative person and you want to express yourself, you don't get to do that. You're not encouraged to, well, you're not allowed to.
And how did that environment then, that breaking down of, I guess, your independent artistic concept, how did all of that still your resolve to then move forward and follow your creative calling?
I think I've always kept that inside me. I think everyone does. Like, you know, you could be, you know, working in retail, but your desire to act is always there.
Work in retail, and I'm not quite sure we can make the comparison here.
Wasn't quite the same? No?
My whole perspective on my day job has now changed. I should say my day jobs in the past,
But you have it inside you, and you just need a time. Or the courage, or maybe the opportunity to just do it. And once you decide to do it, and if you manage to make a living out of it, which is, I think, really important, then you know that you can continue doing this.
And I think the other thing about the army service, I mean, as you said, there's the bleak side of it, but at the same time, there were skills that came out of what you did in the army that really served you well in your creative career as well, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Can you take us through a couple of those?
You get to meet people from all over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my army mate in my section, one was a billionaire, and that was a B. So with
that
a
was
B,
a B.
Yeah, that's the one with the B, not the one with M. But a billionaire, and I've met people in there who has like, you know, criminal records. So it's all jobs, all sections of society, and that helped because now
you're a criminal billionaire.
you took both skills.
With what we do, we have to deal with clients, and we have to work with other people, you know, other designers, art directors, and it's not, everyone's very different, and you have to sort of understand that you don't work so, you know, insular. And you have to learn to deal with people, and especially with business, that you have to learn that it's not just creating stuff, it's about dealing with people too.
So out of the army and into an engineering job that ultimately wasn't the path for you, you say that although you kind of always kept this creative thing inside you, would you say you were a bit lost at that time?
Oh, massively. I was like just, you know, sleepwalking through the job and, you know, it was not good. So I thought after a bit, I realized that, you know, I have to do something. Because if I don't, it'll be too, well, maybe it's too late. Maybe, you know, I will totally lose the desire to really follow my dreams or something like that. So I thought, okay, how can I start this journey? I can't just jump into, say, you know, graphic design with no formal training. I can maybe, but it won't get me far. I believe that. So decided to take the first step. You know, always starts with a first step, and it's easier that way.
And you did make that first step. That became a powerful catalyst to the reason you moved to Australia and you started to study a Bachelor of Industrial Design.
Yep.
You've talked about it a little bit, but it sounds like it was a pretty easy decision once it was made to get over here and start studying.
There wasn't too many viable choices in Singapore back then. Now there is, but you know, back then I wanted to do design, and you know, it was graphic design, product design. I settled on product design, came to Australia, and thought, wow, you know, you can do this. There's all these stuff to learn, and you know, I met a lot of people from everywhere, actually, not just Australians, but you know, Europeans, South Americans, and everyone's story is a little bit different. But this degree has definitely helped me take that first step, shall I say.
You touched on it briefly then, that you were very interested in design. Was that always clear to you, or were there other creative paths, illustrative or visual art or anything else that you were, was it very clear to you that design was the way forward?
I would say yes, design. I loved and respected, obviously, all creative fields, but for me, it's the one I'm drawn to, because it's about, you know, creating, say, a product will be like a lasting item in the world, I guess. Yeah, hopefully for good.
So is that sense of something useful and lasting in someone's life?
Yeah, or even, it might not be even useful. It might just, the person might just take enjoyment out of something beautiful that, you know, sits in their home, or something stupid that makes you laugh, or, you know, it's just that. You know.
I love that.
Doesn't have to save lives all the time.
That's right.
So before we move on to talk more about the Evie Group, I just wanted to check, was this the point in time that you designed your signature silhouette chair?
When I was in university, yes, I did that.
And you won a number of awards for this design. Can you talk to us about how you created the chair, what it looks like, and how that then affected your drive to create more?
I created this silhouette chair when I was in the last year of university, and did a few exhibitions, and I think it went to Melbourne Museum to sit there for a bit. And there is this big time, I would say, furniture company, Cappellini, and the owner Giulio Cappellini came to Australia, and everyone wanted to talk to him because like make my product, take up my product. But he did a private sort of viewing with a couple of us, which the university thought was more promising in terms of the furniture. And I remember he was just really well dressed and spoke very well, and sat down on my chair. I was like, this is very interesting. And I was like, wow, you know, to get praise from someone so established. And I was quite young then, and it was encouraging.
Yeah.
And nothing eventuated out of this. I didn't become a millionaire or something. But it was good to hear that, you know, it was I don't know, valued, yeah. I guess, to a certain degree that people thought was good.
And can you take us through what the chair actually looks like as well? Just because I think, you know, speaking about it probably doesn't do it justice until you get a chance to look at it. But can you take us through a little bit about how it was designed?
It is my take on how a stereotypical chair might look. Some kid might draw it like as the site profile. But what it is laser cut pieces of that profile lined with extruded soft black leather. So it's kind of a modular play piece. It could work like a fan for hotels or art installation. And it's actually more comfortable than it might look.
It's interesting here. It's lined with that leather because, yeah, it looks a little austere, I suppose.
Yeah. But sort of a statement piece rather than a true commercial piece. But it is more comfortable than
that. But it's funny, even though before that you were mentioning this idea of useful and fun, because I would say that this chair is both useful and fun, because the idea is you can use it as a chair, but you can also concertina it out and make it a piece in your home that's just there to look at.
And another thing about design that might apply to many of your past speakers is that the thought process for designs can be similar. Sometimes the end product can be similar. So I'll give you an example where I've got an email from a Korean student a while back, and he was accusing me of stealing his design of that chair.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, what are you talking about? So I did some Googling and found out when the chair was made, he was like 12. So he did it far after and thought that I've copied his chair, which is, you know, no hard feelings. But what I'm saying is, a lot of times, whether it is like, whatever field you're in, because we're thinking along certain creative lines that it might be similar. And some say, appropriate this idea or steal this idea to make it better. But, you know, I think that this is what happened.
You might have just been coming from a similar inspirational place.
Yeah, so don't take it too hard when you see not everyone's out to get you, most of the time anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So while you were studying design in Sydney, of course, you met your creative and romantic partner, Alex Gilmore, who you then joined forces with to start Evie Group, a multidisciplinary product and design studio. Now, obviously, you had very similar interests, but can you take us back to the beginnings of the company, how you guys came up with the idea for it and approached what is really a massive life decision, a starting of a company?
Other than marrying her, that was one of the best decisions that we've made. Because when we're just working for other people, and personally, I was okay with that. Alex hated working for other people. But working for other people allowed us to learn a lot of things that we can take into building our own company, and it's crucial because I feel that this company wouldn't last. It's been five years past the first year if we have not obtained the skills that we got elsewhere. We both love design, we both love graphics and product. It's what we wanted to do. We started a company and we thought, do we just focus on one thing? Do we move more? You know how they say, what do you say? Jack of all trades, master of none.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it worked well, very well for us because we're able to gather two sides of the market. For example, when the graphic stuff might slow down near the end of the year, the product picks up because it's near Christmas. So little business strategies and decisions like that, we don't get to find out till we're actually in it and we learn from it.
And I guess the thing with that too is when you're also juggling a personal relationship with a business relationship, it's then understanding and managing those lines.
Everyone said that. Like, how is it working with the wife? And I'm like, you know what? It's not that hard. Well, for me anyway.
Yeah,
it's so funny. We noticed in our research that you quoted in quite a few articles this sense of competitiveness between the two of you, but how that yes. is actually a positive. Mm. Has mm. that always been the case?
Yeah, I think it's important to when you make a criticism, mm. a design criticism, that you state the reason why. Mm. You just don't say, I don't like it. You know, there has to be a reason. Mm. That if you can articulate your reason, the other person could be like, yeah, fair enough, or you know what, that's just not, rather than, you know, I just don't like it, make it green or something. Yeah. You know, then
fix it.
Just stresses. Yeah. It stresses the professional relationship a bit.
So let's go through how you, we talked about it a bit with the silhouette chair, but obviously you have a lot more experience now running your own company. How do you go from the conception of a new idea to the finished product?
For products, most of the times are things that we just would like for our own home. Yeah. Sometimes client comes in with an idea and we can take it from there. But in terms of the process, we don't have a formal process, so to speak. We have maybe a procedure that, okay, you know, the concept comes first and develop the concept, and then you draw it up in the CAD programs, and you make a model, you 3D print it, you do prototypes, you do tweaks, and then you get to the end product that has whether and that works for graphics too, but graphics are a lot more straightforward. It's just concept and execution and print. You know, with products there's a lot of stuff like, you know, insurance liabilities, you know, distribution, the retail side, the wholesale side, it's a lot more involved. But I think to answer your question on the process, it's just trying to make the design better, just to push it. You know, just when you think that it's, you know, good enough, it's like, what more can we do? Obviously within, you know, budget and time, but, you know, what more can we do? Can we do that little bit more?
If the listeners want to know a little bit more, Alex does go into a bit of detail in the Journey of Australian Designers press clip in regards to the process.
Yeah.
But do you have a particular favourite part in the process that you really enjoy? Like, for instance, is it coming up with the idea? Is it then seeing the final product? What's the part of the process that you most enjoy?
I like the final product. I'm a final product kind of guy. Whether it's the you know, graphics of product, I would like to see the vision where you have gone through and chucked out ideas and, you know, improved on things. But to have it in front of you, to have the client or yourself very happy with the end product and to be proud of that, I think that's my favorite bit at the end.
That's a really interesting idea. Something that has been part of my journey this month. I was listening to a podcast where I may have even talked to you about this, Nick, recently. Mm-hmm. Listening to a podcast where someone was talking about her partner who's a filmmaker, and that during the process of making the film, he learns all this stuff and he gains new experience. So by the time he's finished the film, if you look back at the film that's just been made, you could say, oh, I could do that better with everything you've just learned. But obviously the very nature of the creative process is that you then take that experience into the next film you make, or in this instance, the next product. When you talk about a final product, do you get to the point where you're like, yes, that's perfect for that product, that's the end of the road? Or is it, in the next thing that we make, I'll take what I've learned from this? Is it ongoing, or do you really feel like there is such a thing as a final?
That is that would be very arrogant of me to think that the final product is like the holy grail of product. There is always someone better than you.
But isn't that ironic? Because that's what we aim for, right? We aim for perfection.
But I do love your point, Lauren, regarding this idea of just getting out and doing. Do you find that a lot, that there's a lot of products that I imagine you do, where you create these products and you go, you know what, that was a great process, however, I'm not releasing that to the public, and let's go on to something else. Yeah. But it's just that doing that helps refine your skills.
You have to do it. Even if it turns out to be crappy, you just have to do it because it helps you in your next endeavor.
Yeah.
And if you're so afraid of not doing stuff, then you'll never get to that next level. Well, so.
And I have no idea why my two-legged chair never worked on. I have no idea.
You know what? There's actually a two-legged chair.
Okay.
It is, but they use the backrest to rest against the wall. So it's like a wall. Oh, so you see, there is no stupid idea.
There you go.
You just got to... It's just a creative way to do things.
I wish I'd have run with that idea now. Maybe I can call them up and say, hey, you stole my idea.
Yeah, I've got friends who said, oh, you know what? I've got this great idea. Can you develop it? I'm like, what is it? Oh, a clear toaster. We can see the toast cook. And then he did some research and found out it's been done.
It's already been done. Now, your online bio states, I think this is a really interesting idea, that you are interested in creating products with a sense of character.
Yes.
What does that mean?
So a lot of our products, we name them, like Oliver Table, you know, Frederick Glasses and stuff. I don't know, because I feel, you know, sometimes people have their favorite things, their, you know, favorite pen, their favorite chair, you know, they feel this connection to this seemingly maybe old thing, but you just have that connection. So what we aim to do is a lot of stuff we design, oh yeah, it has to be cool enough, cheap enough, or usable enough, but you should feel like you want to keep it rather than a throwaway object. It should be an object of desire that you like over time grow to like it more,
and it gives it value too, doesn't it? That idea of building character within it gives it more value. I did want to at this point cover a little bit about something that's really big, I feel, in the especially the product design space. It's really around innovation. It seems to be a bit of a buzzword in product design these days. What do you think innovation is in regards to what you do? What do you hope for out of your innovation?
Innovation is, I've learned from, you know, when I just started work, innovation is one of the most it is expensive, probably really
yes,
expensive,
yes.
Because you're taking time and resources out of, you know, getting business or doing the job, exploring. But innovation, I would say, is the most important in not just product, but a lot of fields, because it is the one that drives new markets and have new branches come out of that. Because everyone could be really good at their craft, but you know, you're just sort of working within that space. But innovation allows you to go to like a part that no one's even thought about before, you know, and then people could get better at that. So innovation is hugely important, because it not just creates new opportunities, but you know, it changes the way people think and use things.
So you could say that innovation is telling a new story, or finding a new answer to a question, or asking a new question.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
So how do you stay motivated to keep coming up with awesome, fun, new products? And, you know, how do you stay inspired? And you're running a business, and EV Group does loads of things to try to help support artists. And, you know, what drives you?
Well, initially, well, we've started working from home, and I think a lot of, I guess your listeners start that way too. I'm guessing that you start from home, you have a second job, you know, you try to build enough momentum to take your passion to make it your livelihood. So when we decided we're big enough to get our own office and showroom, because we've got different retailers all around Australia and the world, but you know, we've taken a plunge, you know, added more overheads and pushed for the next step in the business so that we do better.
Yeah. And so with that next step, what's the next 12 months look like for EV Group?
Next 12 months, well, I'm taking a holiday to start. The wife wants to go to New York.
Oh.
And I'm like, Okay.
So everyone visit the website, buy some product already.
No, we've got a 1.5-year-old, yeah. And I'm like, the flight's going to be how many hours? Well, we'll see.
Everyone around you is going to love you.
Yeah, but we'll do that. You know, I'm one of those people who have sat on planes. I'm like, oh, why do you bring a kid who's so young onto the plane? And here I am, you know, going back on my word not to do it.
Bit of a tangent question. I noticed on the EB website that you do brand work with other companies. Like, obviously, through graphic design, you can design logos, and there's a bit of focus on branding there. What is your sense of your own brand?
Clean. Clean, simple. We want to try to make it elegant. We just have this vision of what we want to look like, to ourselves, for it to look like to other people. Like, we've done a lot of branding and art direction stuff for, you know, from a small cafe to multinationals, but for us it's quite personal, so it's always, I don't know how to describe it, to be honest.
But I might be able to jump in there a little bit too, because I guess from a graphic design point of view, we use Dom at my job at Jack Morton. I would agree that I think the benefit of using Dom, it's always beautiful work, but it's always, he's happy to challenge you as well with if it's too cluttered and it doesn't feel like it's working correctly, which I think as a creative producer, that's what you want from your graphic designer. You don't want them to go away and go, oh, okay, I'll do that. And then you get it back and you're like, oh, that's not exactly what I wanted it to be. But if the graphic designer is challenging you to go, well, from a design point of view, it might be better if it's like this. That's the perfect relationship. So I think Dom's very good at knowing what the outcome is and helping you achieve it.
It's about collaboration. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I was actually going to flip it a little, this branding idea a little bit, and ask you another question on the back of that. So it's great that you stepped in there, Nick, because obviously as a designer and a creative, and this idea of how you want things to look, Dom, when you see a company or a product or a person, does a sense of their brand occur to you? Or how you would represent it? And if that's true, how would you represent Nicholas Kane?
Oh, wow.
I'm just thinking about, you know, as actors, we think spend so much time thinking about our own brand. We can never look at ourselves objectively. Yeah, you could talk for hours about this. I'm very interested.
So to be specific, are you sort of talking how I would build my website? I'm just saying,
maybe, you know, as if brand were an aura, you know. Like when you meet people or new things come into your world, I assume that you interpret them through your design creative gaze. And so is there anything... it's a bit of a weird open question, but
I'm sweating now.
Like, you know, when I see things, when I look at things, I could see how it's made. Injection molding, this is welded, this kind of weld, that's, you know, spun. It's what it's made of. You know, you look at ads and products, or when I watch movies, I actually notice a lot. Like, I might be the only one not in the industry to do that. My wife is like, what are you doing? I'll look at the editing. I'll like watch Quantum Solace and I'm like, this is such poor editing. Bourne does it so much better. And why is the cinematography like, decide, I'm not in your field at all, but it's just maybe the way, you know, we all sort of think, and we like, you know, that could be a bit better. You know, it sounds rich when I'm not a filmmaker to say, you know, oh, come on. But for Nick's brand is very apparent. I think he's someone who's very confident, who's someone who's very happy.
Oh, good.
You know, and he not. But outside of that, he seems like someone who's very intelligent and knows what he wants and knows how to get it.
Oh, I've got you fooled, Dom. I love it.
I wouldn't change too much
so
about
you wouldn't edit at all. You wouldn't edit him?
No. Sometimes you see someone and you're like, oh, you know, you could be a bit nicer, or you, You know, because you're not as funny as you think, but Nick is everything that he puts out to be.
So. Well, see, it's funny. You're speaking about editing. Lauren edits me out of the podcast all the time. So
you just hear her.
Yeah. That's it. It's just one long Lauren sometimes.
But then I wrote you into a film to balance it out.
Yeah, exactly. It's true. Well, I'm just glad that you wouldn't use Comic Sans for me as my font.
Just the bane everyone talks about, isn't it? The bane of graphic designers.
That's right.
But I think Comic Sans has maybe some would disagree that it's like clothing. Sometimes it gets so tacky that it becomes cool. On movies, they're so B-grade it actually becomes good.
Yeah.
That maybe Comic Sans will find its
niche.
Day.
Yeah, come back.
Yet.
That's fantastic.
Well, it's probably the perfect lead into, from a product and graphic design perspective, what do you believe the key to good storytelling is, Dom?
I think when I think of storytelling, I think it has to be a build-up. You have to connect with the person that you're trying to tell the story to. That will be the most effective, in my opinion. You can't just jump straight into it. I think keep it real. Mm. Like, when I wrote my wedding speech, I made the photographer cry. And she's like,
yes.
I've been, yes, that's the litmus test, yes. Isn't it? Because she's
impartial
like, I've been
party.
To hundreds and hundreds of this. You know, you get to like, oh, whatever, we'll love each other for the rest of our life, blah, blah, blah. No, I don't, And that's why when I watch movies, those very touching speeches or monologues or whatever are the ones that just are real, Just keep it basic. Don't be too fluffy and crazy sentimental. And that's how I feel that in terms of storytelling, if you start from maybe past experiences, to the final outcome, and along the way it's real, and maybe the hardships that's gone through, but there's light at the end of the tunnel. I like that.
Mm.
That's brilliant.
It's really lovely. As you were telling that story too, Dom, it's shows how popular your products are. There's people just looking in the window.
Hordes at the window.
just hordes of people at the window. So, which is a good testament to your products.
Yeah. Thank you.
That answer also just made me remember that at the very beginning I said we were going to talk about the wisdom that comes with age, but it sounds like all of that is embodied in your idea of what storytelling is, Dom.
Mm. Yeah. When you're young, something bad happens, a small setback, whatever. You think it's the end of the world, But, 10 years later, you're like, oh, it's not that bad. And another 10 years later, the stuff is like, it's not even that important. So, you just get to see different things.
All right, Dom. This is our final question. It's always the most hard-hitting.
Oh, no.
So, please be prepared.
Okay.
Take time to answer this as well.
Have some water if you need it.
You speak on the EV Group website about the importance of designing products for the way that you live. Okay. If you could pick one of your amazing products from the collection and describe your life and personality through it, which one would it be and why? Take your time.
I would say it would be probably our spun lamps.
Uh-huh.
Because it started as an idea. It went through quite a long development because it was quite a difficult manufacturing process with like the molded glass screws and all that stuff, and at the end of it, when we managed to launch it, it won the furniture object lighting of the year in Australia, 2012 I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it went on to be sort of specified in a lot of big, well, like famous places, mm-hmm. I guess, like Number Y Bly Street, which was the Prime Minister's office, I think, and Café Del Mar.
Fantastic.
Westfields in the UK, and a lot of places. But Shanghai Museum of Art, of Glass, actually, and that is the only Australian entry worldwide, and we're with like so many famous people. I know him. I'm like... Like, who are we? We are like no one. So how this relates back to, I guess, the company and my life is that, you know, it's a process. You don't get success overnight. It takes time. You learn stuff, you improve stuff. And at the end of it, if you don't get the success you want, then try again with another product. If you do, which we did, because we're now sort of, in my mind, successful, because, you know, we're able to make a very decent living out of this and we can do what we want, then great. Mm. So that, I would say, is our spun lamps.
Fantastic.
That's amazing. It's been so interesting and lovely sitting down with you today. Thank you so much for joining us, Dom. I have a lot to think about.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Dom. All right, Lauren, what did you take out of that interview with Dom?
Oh, I can't say that there was one specific thing I took out of that interview, because all the way through I kept thinking, oh, that really correlates to this thing that I've learned or this thing that I experienced.
Yes.
Or I really agree with that. You know, from the wisdom that comes with age, the journey to success, the way he watches films, and he's like, oh, I'm thinking about the editing and the cinematography. That's not my field, you know. Should I be thinking about those things?
Yeah,
It just comes back to this idea that I believe that we should be constantly widening our perspective. You know, we should be watching films and not just looking at the acting. We should be thinking about storytelling in all its aspects. And I don't know, there were probably 5 or 6 more golden things that I would love to mention now that I can't.
But I want to come
of.
Right off the back of that, Lauren, because I think that's the most important thing for listeners with this particular podcast. And Dom just not long mentioned it after we finished recording, this idea of, you know, we might not necessarily be in the same field, but the idea of craftsmanship, the idea of innovation, whatever it might be, all these things can relate to whatever your craft might be.
Yeah.
So I think if you haven't already done this, rewind back to the start and have another listen and think about it from the perspective of your craft and how you can take, you know, Dom's amazing experiences and relate them to how you might deliver your own craft.
Absolutely. I find that idea really interesting, that we're in completely different fields, but there is really concrete stuff that I could write down from this interview that will help me on my journey. So, Nicholas Kane, got some recommendations for me?
I do. I came prepared. this recommendation actually comes from me surfing Facebook, would you believe?
Oh, is that because you've got no friends in the real world? You're just hanging out on Facebook.
Maybe. Single tear running down my cheek. No, I follow Kevin Spacey on Facebook. He's my friend. And I did notice that he had this particular little post that said, take my masterclass. I was intrigued. I said, yeah, I'd love to take Kevin Spacey's masterclass. And I followed it through and I found this really, really cool online portal, which is called masterclass.com.au. Have you ever heard of it, Lauren?
I have, actually. I saw Dustin Hoffman on the Facebook link thing originally, and I liked it, but then I didn't really understand what it was or how to move further forward. So when I saw your recommendation for this month, I was like, oh, this is really exciting. So please tell me more.
Well, first of all, congratulations on having Dustin Hoffman as a friend. Secondly, how fantastic is this?
Friend wars.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. What Masterclass is basically online classes created for students of all skill levels for a heap of different disciplines. So think acting. Think
performance. So it's not just acting. Okay.
No. This is photography. It's writing. Even trying to think of her name. Serena Williams giving you tennis lessons.
Get out. Really?
Crazy, yeah? Well, the thing about this too is that I've done a bit of research and they're really, really wonderful clips and workbooks that you can take part in. For instance, let's use the tennis analogy here. The edit of these clips is fantastic to give you the degree of which you need to hit the tennis ball for it to spin in a certain way. Like, it's a really well-crafted online class system. And I think the best thing about this is that it gives fantastic people, like even James Patterson, from a writing perspective, you can take his masterclass. It gives you access to some pretty amazing people.
So have you signed up?
Well, this is the thing. $90 for these masterclasses. I've signed up. I'm actually going to do Dustin Hoffman's acting masterclass, only because Kevin Spacey's doesn't come out until March next year. Then I'll be jumping on top of that.
Yeah.
But the other one I want to do is James Patterson's writing one. How cool is that?
Yeah, that is cool.
And one other thing you can do if you take Kevin Spacey's class in March, there is the opportunity that he can audit your work. So throughout the process, people can send in their videos and he can audit your work as you're going through the masterclass. It's really cool.
Wow, that does sound really cool.
I just think for $90...
So when's the Dustin Hoffman one?
Well, it's already live. So
There's
four or five that have already happened and you can still purchase those. They're $90 a pop and you get, you know, say 24 different modules that you go through.
Yeah.
So I think it's fantastic because, you know, I was speaking last podcast about finding it difficult to find classes that are fitting into my schedule. Well, this is kind of like
e-learning. And it's interesting because I was talking about the online class that I'm doing and how that's helped me to tap into the practice and create those habits.
Yeah. Apparently, it's been around for a little while, so I'm just glad I stumbled upon it. You know, listeners, get along to masterclass.com.au and have a look. What about your recommendations? Did you bring one along this month?
Yes, Mr. Kane.
Great.
Actually, I found a really great recommendation just after we went live with the last podcast. I'm like, oh my God, this is awesome. I have to wait till next month to talk about it. It's a podcast, an Australian podcast, called Across the Aisle. And it is a monthly podcast, which includes critical discussions about theatre in Melbourne. It's hosted by Carla Donnelly, a theatre fan and pop culture obsessive, and Philip Teal, who is an English teacher, loves theatre, and his classes often review plays and work on scripts, etc. So it's monthly, and they've been going for 4 months. This month, I've listened to all four of the podcasts.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, they're brilliant. So 1 month was looking at shows for Melbourne Fringe. 1 month was looking at the shows for Neon. But they'll each pick a show and then the other one has to go and see it with them. So it might not be something they would have chosen at all. And it's really exciting and interesting for me to sit there and listen to two really intelligent individuals from different backgrounds dissect the theatre that we're creating in Melbourne at the moment. That is my hot tip.
Yeah, sounds like some intelligent stuff.
You know, but they're talking really relaxed, and they just have a really nice style and very interesting. So that's my recommendation.
Great. Across the Aisle podcast, was that?
Yes.
Yeah, beautiful. And you can just find that on iTunes.
Yeah, it's on everywhere, I think, that we are. It's on Stitcher as well. Yeah, so I'll put some links up for it.
Beautiful.
So, December, Nick.
Oh, far out.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, we were just talking about how amazing it is to get to podcast 21, but December, we're there already. That's scary, isn't it?
Scary and exciting. I don't know. I mean, I don't like to rush ahead. I really like to think about the fact that, yeah, we're in December. It's still 2015. What else can I get out of this year? Because it has been an amazing year.
Well, I think that's probably a nice lead-in for what my month's looking like, because I won't be looking to do any reflection this particular month. I really don't want to, because I think that's part of where I got myself in that little funk just before the start of this, last podcast. I wanted to turn from this idea where I spoke at the start of the podcast around just persisting. I want to turn that action into something even more, you know, like I really want to start this snowball effect of, now that I'm in Sydney, let's make this happen. Let's keep doing the things that matter and really start to snowball this idea of action. I'm turning into Action Man, basically, Lauren.
Better than Ant-Man.
That's right. Better than Flapping Man, I would have thought. But there's a few things that I've got planned as well. I'm going to see a life coach. Super exciting.
That's exciting. And who is your life coach?
Her name is Claire Hall. She, a few years ago, was the winner of the Telstra Business Woman of the Year Awards.
Yeah.
With a life coach, you go along and you do this sort of 15 to half an hour kind of, hey, are we, you know, going to work in this kind of relationship, or are we kind of too different in the way that we look at the world? We had a great catch up, and I think she will give me good actionable goals for what I hope to do in 2016. So
brilliant.
There we go. First little sort of step into this idea of action man.
Yeah.
I am going to do the masterclass with Dustin Hoffman, as I've already spoken around.
With Dusty.
With Dusty, my mate, your mate. The other thing I'm going to do before we speak again is take part in some classes at the Sydney Screen Acting Group.
Oh.
Have you heard of the Sydney Screen Acting Group, Lauren?
No, I haven't.
Well, I've been hearing some really wonderful things about them, so I'm going to take one of their classes. It's much more screen-based stuff. It's two gentlemen, I believe, who started it. The first man is Sam Haft, and now I hope I get this right, Chum Ahelopola. Working actors, they've got this studio that they've started, and they get in other working actors to come and work with you and work on your screen performance, essentially.
Oh.
And I've only heard great things about them.
Yeah.
So I'm really keen to get along and do some classes and, you know, see what they're all about.
I can't wait to hear about the outcome of all of this. It's so exciting.
Yeah.
Can't wait to see what Action Man comes through with.
Yeah, that's right. Hopefully he doesn't turn into Fizzler Man.
Is that everything, Action Man?
It's everything
don't,
for me.
Don't
Lauren.
Lose your shit on me.
What about your month, Lauren? What's ahead?
Well, of course, I'm going into the next stages of edit, so that's really exciting. And
super exciting.
No doubt there will be many more learnings in store for me.
But you've got a really good direction there by the sounds of things, where you just know exactly where you're going with this, which is great.
You know, even if I feel this sure and we go through the edit and isn't quite right, that's the whole thing about creativity, isn't it? You just, you need to try, you need to go for what you want and just try stuff. Hopefully some more additions this month and maybe some good news from the various callbacks that
yes.
I've had recently.
Sugars.
I've already mentioned that I want to make the most of my last month of 2015. I want to just really enjoy being in December. Oh, and of course, I tried to bully myself last month into sending my Possible campaign live by announcing that it was going live a couple of days after Podcast 20 went to air, which did not work.
You gave it a crack, though. You really tried to bully yourself.
For anyone who's listening to this recording, you should be able to find the Possible campaign live right now and be able to go and put some money on it. That
some
is my
sweet
gift.
Cash.
My gift to you.
And indeed, their gift to you.
Yes, we're all giving. What am I saying?
It's that time of year.
My last thing, at the beginning of the year, I'd done a looking back at 2014 with Andrea, and we'd evaluated what we'd achieved and then set goals for the year ahead. And we started the year with our accountability sessions that throughout the year have sort of drifted off path. But I'm really keen that we, again, at the end of the year, have a similar session to what we did last December, so that I can look at this year, having started out with those goals and all the other things I've done along the way, and see what I've achieved this year and where I am this year in relation to last year. So you can relax. You are not required to do any reflecting. I have picked
fine.
That up on your behalf.
Yeah, I won't bully people into, you know, action man around me. You can reflect. I understand that December is usually a month of reflection. But how exciting to be able to then look at where you are now from where you were 12 months ago. That's
Yeah. There'll be a lot of good stuff happening this month. And I was going to say, Podcast 22, we haven't discussed this, Nick. Will we be taking a little Christmas break?
Yeah, you know what? I think it would be possibly nice to take a little Christmas break. Maybe everyone needs a break to come back, you know, ready to go.
We might see if we can post a storyteller snapshot in January.
Great idea.
And also, of course, you guys can tap into the blogs that we're posting on the Cultural
yes.
Temperature page on our website. And that's ongoing from now. The theme for next month is Health as an Artist. Ta-da.
Health is an artist.
So until that time, you can find us on the usual channels, our website, theactorstorytelling.com.au, about.me, Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, and iTunes.
Remember, we love your feedback. So there is still a wonderful survey that you can complete and tell us what you like, what you don't. And also just contact us if you'd like. theactorstorytelling@gmail.com. Have a wonderful Chrissy break and New Year's break.
Yes, have a lovely end of year, and continue to join us next year on The Act of Storytelling.
Thanks for listening.